Yeah, I just want to just make an announcement that if you're not planning on being a regular, please don't come. That's my regular, unless you're visiting from out of town or something. It's very disconcerting for a teacher to have people kind of walk out in the middle or whatever it is. It's really a matter of, it's not just for me, it's extreme derech eretz. I mean, I'm stuck in shiurim that I sometimes don't like to be in. But you stay to the end. I mean, the idea that guys have this minug of walking out if they're not interested in the first 5 minutes is mamish, a tremendous lack of midas and derech eretz, and it disturbs me personally. So if you're going to kind of come in and walk out after 10 minutes because I bored you today, then I would prefer if you don't come. So I'm sorry if I'm a little harsh. But okay, so we are starting the Sefer Tanya, and today actually I don't even think we're going to start the Sefer. We're going to look at the cover of the Sefer, because the Alter Rebbe also wrote the cover, and the wording that he chose to indicate what the Sefer is about is in itself very, very significant. First, the Alter Rebbe, called the Old Rebbe, is really a term that Chabad gave him. He was the founder of the Hasidus that he called Chabad, Chachma Bina Das. It later became known as Lubavitch, but Lubavitch was only the city to where they moved, and not even in his lifetime. So the Alter Rebbe perhaps was never in Lubavitch. His city was Liozhna, which is a city in Belarus. And in fact, what's interesting is Chabad and Lubavitch are not necessarily synonymous. Chabad is the philosophical predicate of this particular Hasidus. And in time, it actually branched off. There were different groups that were called Chabad Hasidim. There was Babrisk, etc. The main group wound up to be the one centered in Lubavitch, and that traces the succession. But there can be Chabad, or at least there were in Europe, Chabad that was not Lubavitch, although all Lubavitch is by definition Chabad. The Alter Rebbe himself was a Talmud of the Magid of Mezerich. So we know that the Hasidic movement was founded by Rabbi Yisrael, called the Baal Shem Tov. And we saw Baal Shem Tov had a very small group of Talmidim. He did not have large numbers of Talmidim, but his Talmud Muvak, who led the movement after the Baal Shem Tov died, was the Rav Dov Ber, who was the Magid, the preacher of Mezerich, of the city of Mezerich, again in the Ukraine. And really, the Magid of Mezerich was the founder of the Hasidic movement. He made it a worldwide movement, at least a European movement, within the Jewish world. The Magid himself was crippled. He was not able to walk very well. He walked on crutches. But he drew a map of Europe, Lithuania, Poland, Hungary, all of these different countries. And he decided which of his Talmidim should be the chief emissary to convert, so to speak, the Jews over to Hasidus. And basically, he had a great sense of what were the attributes of each type of Jew in these communities, and which of his great Talmidim were most suitable. So the Magid of Mezerich's Talmidim were the first generation of the great Hasidic rabbis. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev was a Talmud of the Magid of Mezerich, Rav Yisrael of Koznitz, the Noam Elimelech, Rav Elimelech of Lezhensk, whose yahrzeit around Purim time is still very, very gigantic, many, many people, tens of thousands of people from Eretz Yisrael and America and Europe go to Lezhensk to celebrate or to commemorate his yahrzeit, Rav Zusha, etc. These are all Talmidim of the Magid of Mezerich. The youngest of his Talmidim was Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi. And Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi was not born into a Hasidic family, obviously. In fact, virtually none of the early Hasidim could have been born into a Hasidic family. But Rav Shneur Zalman was a great-great-great-grandson of the Maral of Prague. So the Maral of Prague was obviously way before the Baal Shem Tov, but the Maral of Prague is an honorary Hasid, either because of the Alter Rebbe or because a lot of the Maral's thoughts influenced Hasidus. And when Rav Shneur Zalman was 18, he was already a great gaon in Kabbalah and in Halacha. He already was a great gaon. And he was not sure where to go to continue to grow. And his great suffix was, should he go to Vilna to learn with the Vilna Gaon, or should he go to the Mezuritra Maggid and imbibe Chassidus? So Rav Shneur Zalman could have become a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. He decided that he would go to the Mezuritra Maggid because he said, to know how to learn, I already know how to learn, the Maggid of Mezuritra can show me something new that I haven't yet been exposed to. And he was the youngest of the Maggid's Talmidim, and the Maggid assigned him Lithuania to promulgate Chassidus. Now Lithuania, Lita, in those days was much, much larger than the modern country of Lithuania. It included Belarus and portions of the Ukraine, right? So we talk about the Litvishy yeshiva world. It's much more than just Lithuania. It certainly included Latvia, it included Belarus, and the like. And the reason why the Maggid assigned Rav Shneur Zalman Lithuania, so to speak, is because the Litvishy tradition, certainly from the Vilna Gaon, but even before the Vilna Gaon, was one that was extremely connected to Talmud Torah. It was very, very intellectual, very thoughtful. Sometimes that's expressed derogatorily when you talk about a person that is cold-natured and unemotional and non-feeling. So the expression is, you're a kalta litvak, you're a cold litvak, right? That's considered to be an insult. But the truth of the matter is, the Lithuanian temperament considered that to be a point of pride, because they considered emotionalism to be cheap and superficial, and they loved the fact of this kind of rational facility. And of all of the early Gedolei Chassidus, the Bala Tanya was really the most intellectual. In fact, he was the closest to being a Mistagin. You could say in some ways he was the least Chassidus of all of the early Chassidim. And as a result, number one, he was also, we can't really rank people, but certainly he was one, if not the greatest, halakhic authority among the Talmidim of the Maggid. In fact, the Maggid told him to author a Shulchan Aruch, kind of bringing the Shulchan Aruch up to date. Of course, it's already 250 years ago. And this is called the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. So when a Chabad person says Shulchan Aruch, he actually means that sefer, but we don't call it the Shulchan Aruch. When we say the Shulchan Aruch, we mean Rav Yosef Karo with the Ramah, but it's called Shulchan Aruch HaRav, or Shulchan Aruch Balatanya, or Shulchan Aruch Admor HaZakein. Admor is Adonenu, Moreinu of Rabbeinu Zakein, the altar Rebbe, or Shulchan Aruch Shel Rav Zalman, Rav Shneur Zalman, or Shulchan Aruch HaGraz, Gimel Reish Zion. That's how the Mishneh Berurah brings it. Now the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is a very, very important halachic work and a very well accepted halachic work. Even if you're not Chabad, it is quoted by the Mishneh Berurah many, many times. Now granted, if you're not Chabad, you don't always paskin like the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. But he's always a posek that all poskim take into account. The Hachra, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. But there's another reason why the Sefer is especially beautiful, and it's totally underutilized. And that is, in addition to giving you a psak, based on considering Rishonim and Achronim, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav explains the derivation of halacha and the reasons for halacha. You know, in fact, it is to this day one of the best svarim that explains halachic concepts. If you want to understand what muktzah is, if you want to understand some principles of Melechus Shabbos, or some of the Yesodos of Tefillah. In other words, you don't just want rules, you actually want to have a sense of what is the structure of halacha. So under those circumstances, Shulchan Aruch HaRav is absolutely one of the best books. You have to understand, a halachic sefer is useful not only for the actual rules that it gives you. An example might be learning Rambam, right? To learn Rambam for halacha lemaisa is not going to help you. I mean, it'll help you. I mean, a lot of things will be the same, but you can't rely on what the Rambam says as to what you are supposed to do. Because there's been a lot of halacha since the Rambam, particularly for Ashkenazim. But if you want to understand an area of halacha, the Rambam is actually better than the Shulchan Aruch, because the Rambam gives you background and the like. Well, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav does even more than that. Shulchan Aruch HaRav is an absolutely phenomenal sefer, giving you the background and the explanation of halacha. So if you're learning a Gemara, particularly in Seder Moed, that you don't understand like a concept, Shulchan Aruch HaRav can actually be one of the svarim that you turn to in order to understand this halachic area. But now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because the Maggid understood that of all of his Talmudim, the Baal HaTanya was probably, I don't want to say, it's not for us to judge, but certainly he was, if not the greatest, one of the greatest, Bekiyim and the masters of Shas and Poskim. And as a result, when the Maggid has to figure out who should be the Shaliach to bring Chassidus to Lithuania, which was a bastion of Shas and Poskim and rabbinic learning, so the Alter Rebbe was the best person to send. You know, you couldn't send like an emotional guy who danced on the table or whatever it is. You needed somebody who could deal with the Litvashe Gedolim as an equal in some ways. But, we'll talk about the Machlokas a little later on. So be it as it may, the Alter Rebbe combined many, many different talents. He was, again, it's not for us to even talk about it this way, but just to understand the biography a little bit. Number one, as I say, he was a tremendous guy in Shas and Poskim. He was a tremendous master of theoretical Kabbalah, the Kitzvei Ha'ari, Rizal, and the like. Number three, he actually was a quite top-rate administrator. He was able to kind of coordinate different things. He was a good fundraiser. He was able to collect a lot of money from different people. He was able to organize movements, etc. And again, to some degree, once Chabad to this day is tends to be very good in administration. They can run all sorts of programs, and that actually is a Yerusha from the Alter Rebbe himself. Again, it's an interesting combination of talent, actually, because on one hand, he was the great, great theoretical master of the Sodos of Kabbalah. On the other hand, he was tremendously good at galvanizing people and getting people together and the like. Now, initially, he did not start out to become a Rebbe or to found a Chassidus. In fact, initially, he was essentially helping an older Talmud of the Maggid, the Rav Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk, in organizing, but Rav Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk went to Eretz Yisrael. He was one of the very first Hasidic people to come to Eretz Yisrael. This is even before the Talmidim of the Gra. The Talmidim of the Gra later came to Yerushalayim. Rav Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk went up to Tveria, went up to the Galil, and that's why basically the foundation of the Ashkenazic communities in Yerushalayim are Litvashe, the Talmidim of the Gra, and the foundation of the Ashkenazic communities in the Galil and Tzfat and Tiberia are mainly Hasidim. Well, obviously, in the course of time, you have elements of both all over the place. But that's why, for example, in Yerushalayim, Ashkenazim duchen every day, because this was the Shita of the Gra. And that is why in Tiberia and Tzfat in the Galil, they only duchen on Shabbos, which Bechlal is very modern, because there is no minog in Chutz La'aretz to only duchen on Musaf of Shabbos. In Chutz La'aretz, the normal Ashkenazic minog is to only duchen on the Musaf of Yom Tov, but it is said that this was a compromise the Hasidim made with the Sfardim. The Sfardim duchened every day. They always do that, even in Chutz La'aretz. So the Hasidim said, we don't do that, but since the Sfardim were the majority, the Hasidim had to come to some type of Bishara. And the Pshara was a Musaf on Shabbos. But that's why there is a difference between the Galil and down here, based on the fact that the Galil came from Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk. So originally, Rav Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk was planning on keeping his Hasidim in Russia as well. But you can imagine, even today that would be hard. And in a time without email, without phones, you know, it's not that easy to be a Hasidic Rebbe when your Hasidim are all in Russia. So eventually Rav Shneur Zalman became the manhig of the Hasidim in Belarus and in Lithuania, and they became his movement. Now again, he was a Talmud of the Maggid, right? And his Chaverim, his older Chaverim, Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, the famous Rav Zusha, Rav Elimelech of Lezhensk, who was much older, but this was his Chevra, so to speak. But in the course of time, many Hasidim gravitated to him, and he began to develop certain shitas that were a bit unique and a little bit different than the shitas of the other Hasidische Rebbes. And he indeed didn't like some of the tendencies that were developing in other movements. So he began to develop different types of shitas, and initially he would communicate this orally through various, both shmuzin, public shiurim, public talks, and also in meeting people one by one. Eventually, more and more people came to see him. It was not possible to meet with everybody, so he wrote down the basic hashkafas and the basic answers to problems that people had, and these were initially circulated by Hasidim copying and recopying, and then everything was sent out. But what happens is, in those days, if you're simply copying things by hand, there could be a lot of mistakes that are introduced and distortions, and perhaps even people rewriting things sometimes. So eventually the Rebbe decided that he had to publish this in print in order that these teachings would be very, very definitive. And this is the Sefer that we call Tanya, although Tanya is not the name. It's not the name of the Sefer at all. So you have to know that the Sefer Tanya, and I'll discuss the structure in a moment, although it is, of course, a book of Kabbalah, and it's a book of Musar, and it's a book of philosophy, all of that is true. But in many, many ways, the genesis of the Sefer Tanya was a book to address the problems and the conflicts and the issues that Hasidim had in how to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to give them chizuk in not giving up, not in spite of the obstacles and the difficulties that they face. So really, it is a manual. Again, I say it's Kabbalah, and it's Musar, and it's Hashkafa, all of that. But it's also primarily a book of Chizuk and pastoral counseling. The Alter Rebbe is basically saying, as he says in his Hakdama, that if I can't talk to you personally, I'm going to communicate through this book all of the things you need to know and you need to feel in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. That's why Chabad makes the point over and over again, and it's an obvious point, and it's 100% true, that the purpose of learning a Sefer like Tanya, learning Tanya, is not simply to know the theoretical structures that the Rebbe talks about, but to translate these theoretical structures in how you're going to live as a Jew, as an Eved Hashem. But if you simply learn it on an intellectual plane, you are missing the whole purpose of why the book was written. So, let's look at the, I don't know if everyone has it, Tanya, but I'll read it if you don't have it. Yeah.
Good question. When you talk about the Shulchan Aruch, are there still post-human, I guess in the Chabad world, or areas of Chassidus that passed from the Shulchan Aruch, and is that practically different in?
Yeah, well, Chabad passed it, and I mean, not 100%, but you know, Chabad 95% would be straight from the Shulchan Aruch Rav. You know, there are some exceptions, either because some minhagim changed in time, or because the Alter Rebbe also has a sitter, and sometimes there are discrepancies between the sitter, whatever. But 95% Shulchan Aruch Rav is their basic pesach halacha. Yeah.
Is it true that also some other Hasidic groups, because they see an element of Kabbalah in the Shulchan Aruch Rav, something beyond just the straight Shulchan Aruch, so they also incorporate some of those minhagim?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Shulchan Aruch Rav does not use Kabbalah. Again, it's very similar to Rav Yosef Karo himself. Rav Yosef Karo himself was a great, great Makobel, but he incorporates Rav Yosef Karo was an older contemporary of the Arizal. But Rav Yosef Karo was in his 60s, late 60s, when the Arizal came to Tzfat, the Arizal was 36, and the Arizal died at 38. And it says that the Yosef Karo actually wanted to go hear the Ari teach Kabbalah, but every time he came, he fell asleep. So the Arizal told him, it was Nigzar min Hashamayim that you should not learn from me. It's not your cover. It's not covered for you that you should be my Talmud. But Rav Yosef Karo was a great, great Makubal. And in fact, Rav Yosef Karo had a Malach that he learned with. And we actually have a Sefer which gives us the transcripts of his learning with the Malach. It's called Magid Meisharim. You can get Sefer, Magid Meisharim. So Rav Yosef Karo was no slouch. Rav Yosef was a great, great Makubal. And yet, in the Shulchan Aruch, he is not Machnis Kabbalah that much. The Zohar maybe is mentioned less than five times in the whole four Shulchan Aruch. So in many ways, the Alter Rebbe followed that kind of model, meaning he was not Ma'ariv Kabbalah that much. The people who did that were much later. The Ben Ish Chai, they brought in Kabbalah. In fact, as you know, Rav Avadja, he was against that. Rav Avadja was critical of the Ben Ish Chai because the Ben Ish Chai brought in too much Kabbalah into Halacha. Like Rav Avadja almost got, well, he describes it metaphorically, he almost got killed. You know, Rav Avadja's first shiurim, when he was 15 years old, so he was yeshiva by a single boy, so he was told between Mincha and Maariv if he should go to the Musayyaf Shul. You know the Musayyaf Shul, right here. Musayyaf, okay. And between Mincha and Maya, and it was a shul of Balabatim, working people. So they would learn, like just like Ashkenazic shuls might do Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, so they do Ben Ish Chai. So his job was read the Ben Ish Chai and just explain a little bit. So he comes in, he starts reading the Ben Ish Chai, but he doesn't agree with the Ben Ish Chai. He's 15 years old. He doesn't agree with the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai contradiction of Yosef Karo, etc. So he starts saying, well, the Ben Ish Chai is wrong here, and you know, whatever. He's 15 years old, he's saying that. So he says, they wanted to lynch him. They wanted to kill him. I mean, this kid is coming in. And Mavaza, the Ben Ish Chai, you should know, I mean, among Sephardim was like the Vilna Gaon. I mean, Ben Ish Chai was highest of the highest. So his Rosh Hashiva, Rav Ezra Atiyah, Zichron Lebracha, was the Rosh Hashiva of Parat Yosef, had to come in and kind of save him and said, listen, you can write, you know, any of your horrors, but when you're teaching publicly, you don't have to, you don't have to argue with the Ben Ish Chai in this way. So Rav Avadja himself was critical of the Ben Ish Chai, and of course, and later, in all of his Jewish, he says that Halacha and Kabbalah shouldn't automatically be mixed, and even the Alter Rebbe did not mix them. So Shulchan Aruch Rav is a chibur, but in the Tanya itself, so first of all, the first thing to note, if you just read the cover page, the Shar page, and this was written by the Alter Rebbe himself, Tanya is not the name of the Sefer. The Sefer is called Likutei Amorim. Likutei Amorim is a very humble title. It just means a collection of statements. If you remember, the Ramchal writes in the Hakdama of the Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal writes that, with his humility, that I'm writing a Sefer, I'm not going to tell you a single new thing in the Sefer, I'm just going to tell you all the things you already know, but people forget, so I'm going to repeat them. So the Alter Rebbe, in a similar vein, says, I'm not going to tell you any chidushim. Likute, I'm just gathering together what people say. Now, then it says, Chelek Rishon, right? So Likute Amarim, the Sefer Likute Amarim actually has two chalakim. Chelek Rishon, which is the biggest part of the book, right? This is the first 53 parakim. Is called Sefer Shel Beinonim, the book of the middle of the road person. And of course, what that means exactly is going to have to, that's the Sefer. And that is what we know. Chazal have three categories: Sadikim, righteous people; Rishoyim, evil people; Beinonim, middle of the road people. Now you look in the Rambam. The Rambam says, Sadika means more mitzvos than averos, Rishoyim means more averos than mitzvos, Beinonim 50-50. That's how the Rambam defines it. That's a very difficult definition, because that definition changes minute by minute, second by second. I mean, how likely is it that I'm going to be a Beinoni, right? If I say one word of Lashon Hara, you know, I mean, it switches the balance every second. So we're going to see that the Alter Rebbe develops, and you'll see why he develops it, a whole revolutionary new idea of what a Beinoni is. In point of fact, a Beinoni is someone that we would regard by normal definitions an absolute tzaddik, but he's still in the world of struggle. That when you're struggling with the Yetzer Hara, even if you're winning, even if you win all the time, but if you're in the world of struggle, you're a Beinoni. We'll see why that's important. And therefore, this book is, or this Sefer, Chelek Aleph of Likutei Amorim, is the life of the Beinoni, the struggle of the Beinoni. And it gives all sorts of number one definitions, of course, but Eitzes, how to struggle with the Yetzer Hara, how to preserve Simcha, how to protect yourself from depression, and Atzlus in Avodas Hashem. And even the idea that I've been serving Hashem for so many years, why do I still have a struggle? And the answer is, because that's what a Beinoni is. A Beinoni lives in that world. And that is what gives Hashem nachas and pride in your struggle. Struggle is part of life. You can see the Rebbe as giving chizuk here. Struggle is part of life, and it's what gives Hashem the greatest pleasure in everything that you do. We'll talk about tzaddikim and the like, but this is called Sefer Shel Beinonim. Now, let's go. I just want to read a few more lines about this. Malukats, it is gathered, meaning it's anthologized. Again, this is the Rebbe's humility. Mipi svarim umipi sofrim. It is anthologized from books and from scribes, from human teachers, meaning the Rebbe is saying, my sources are both written and oral. Now, Chabad has a Masorah in particular, that the besides the svarim of Chazal, Gemara, Medrash, Zohar, obviously, Kisvei Ari, the two primary literary sources that the Alter Rebbe used in writing Tanya were the writings of Maharal, who actually was his great-great-grandfather, and the writings of the Shalach HaKadosh, Rabbi Yeshaya Horowitz, Shnei Luchos HaBris. The Shalach HaKadosh, again, is a sefer that is really underutilized today, but the Shalach HaKadosh is a phenomenal sefer. It's a massive sefer. It probably would run around 2,500 pages of halacha, kabbalah, perushim on chumash, just like everything is in there. In fact, a new edition of Shalach came out recently in four volumes. Just the index to the, really a very phenomenal, the index is 1,000 pages. Just a huge, huge index. And the like. So the Shalach is a great, great sefer, but very, very difficult to use and to find. Now, the Shalach was very important because the Shalach actually was the sefer that introduced the Kabbalah of the Ari to Europe, to Germany, to Poland, and to Russia. So, and eventually the writings of the Ari himself got there, but the Shalach was the introduction. So, it's Mekubal in Chabad that the Svarim that the Alter Rebbe is referring to is the writings of the Maharal, which of course we have, and the Shalach HaKadosh. The Sofrim, the human teachers, are of course the Magid of Mezerich, and the Chaverim and the Talmidim of the Magid of Mezerich that the Alter Rebbe was very connected to, including the Berditchever. They were very, very close friends. Rav Elimelech of Lizhensk, etc. And these are the Svarim, Kadosh HaElyon, they are holy, Nishmas HaMeidim, meaning they were not alive by the time this was printed. Alright, so that's one thing. And then it goes on, Miyusad Ala Pasuk. And this is from these are the Alter Rebbe's own words. This Sefer, or at least Chelek Aleph, which is called Sefer Shel Beinonim, is based on a Pasuk, which we just read a few weeks ago, a Pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim, Ki karov eilecha hadavar ma'ot bepicha uvilvavcha la'asoso. What is the Torah saying? Remember, this is the where the Torah says, Lo bashamayami, the Torah is not in heaven. So a person might say, who's going to go up to heaven and get it? Lo me'eber layamu, it is not on the other side of the ocean where you could say, who could cross the ocean? No. Ki karov eilecha hadavar me'od. It is near to you, it is accessible to you. Bepicha, in your mouth you can learn it. Uvilvavcha, and in your heart, la soso. And the Rebbe says, Sefer Shel Beinonim is designed to explain to the Beinonim how the Torah is Torah, which means the Torah, meaning the connection to Hashem, is accessible and available for every person. But then he says, Levayer heitev, heichu karav miot. How is it close to me? How is it accessible to me? But here he adds an interesting expression, "Bederech arucha uketzara," through a pathway that is long and short. Now, there are Bezras Hashem. So, actually, you know, again, I mean, obviously, particularly Chabad has been studying Tanya for so many hundreds of years that they're medayik in every single word. But there's a lot of richness even in this phrase. What does it mean, b'derech arucha ketzara? So there are two pshatim you could give. One pshat is that the Rebbe says, I will spell it out in greater detail, and then I will encapsulate, meaning he'll just give you an arucha and a ketzara. But there's actually a deeper meaning. And the Rebbe is alluding to a medrash Eicha, famous medrash in Eicha. The beginning of the medrash of Eicha talks about the great wit of the Yerushalmi kids. I still see it even today. They were kind of wise guys. And a person was traveling from outside, from another town, and he needed to get to a certain place. And he asked the child, give me the shortest route. So the child says, do you want the long route that's short, or do you want the short route that's long? So, you know, the guy said, you don't have to be a wise guy, just give me the short route, even if it's a short route that's long. So he gave him a short route. As the crow flies, it was the shortest route. But it was filled with holes and blockades, and he just couldn't get through it. It was short, but in reality it was long. There was a long route that you had to walk around, but you got there faster. So the Rebbe is making the very interesting point, and that is, I'm going to give you a plan that is not going to be so easy. I'm going to give you a plan that takes work, that takes effort. Other people might give you something that seems to be a short, fast way to spirituality. Now, the Rebbe's Maram is already here, one of the key ideas of his thought, and that is, as a Litvak, indeed, the Rebbe had a certain, you might call, suspicion of emotionalism bringing a person to Hashem. A person gets emotional, a person can write, you have a Karl Bach minion, for example. You know, those are good things. You get really, really excited, etc. And that seems to be what you might call the short way. That's the quick way. A fast way to connect to God. But what happens is, those emotional experiences kind of leave you after a while. So it seems like a short path, but it's going to be very long till you get where you need to go. So the Rebbe, right at the outset, by use of this expression, he's saying, I'm going to give you a long path. The path I'm going to give you is not going to be so easy. It'll take work. It'll take avoda. It'll take concentration. It'll take introspection. It'll take a lot of Torah learning. In fact, the Rebbe has a perek in Tanya about the supreme value of Torah learning. So you might think, why should I do this? I see other ways of coming to Hashem that are so quick. So the Rebbe is using the medrash. No, those ways might seem short, but they're going to be much longer. This seems long, but it's going to be shorter because it'll get you where you need to go. Sooner in a better and deeper way, right? So that's why he calls the Sefer Shel Beinonim Derech Arucha Uketzara. Because he's Mamish Marabis to the Medrash, it's the Derech Arucha that is why it looks Arucha vis-a-vis the more emotional type of thing, but in fact it is Ketzara. Now then he says Be'ezrat Hashem. So even here, you would think there's not a lot to darshan on the word Be'ezrat Hashem, but actually it is, because you can even translate this in two ways. You can say, my book is explaining this, Be'ezrat Hashem, that with the help of God, I have explained it. That's how you normally read this. Or another way of reading it is, I'm explaining how you will reach Hashem through the Derech Arucha, that's Ketzara, but only with Hashem's help will you reach it. Meaning he's emphasizing that a person should never have the gaiva that he reaches anything on his own. It is the reaching of the destination, not just the writing of the book. It is the reaching of the destination that is Be'ezras Hashem. Now, a little. Now, the rest of it was in fact not written by the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe stopped after Be'ezras Hashem. And the reason is, Lakutei Amorim, obviously it says here, has two chalakim. On this particular page, it only tells you Chalak Rishon, which is called Sefer Shel Beinonim. Chalak Sheni, again, just go right during the Tanya, is a very, very important work called Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna. Now, it's prefaced. There's a little essay before that called Chinuch Katan, which is based on the Pasuk Chanoch L'Nar Al Pi Darko, training a child according to the Derech. But that's really in the nature of a bit of an introduction to what is called Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna. And this actually, in some ways, is a bit of a controversial part of the Tanya with the Vilna Gaon. This discusses the nature of the unity of God and the idea of Tzimtzum, the idea that how can physical existence be in the same place where God is? Did God contract himself? Did God withdraw? Or is Hashem in everything, etc.? And if Hashem is in everything, then why isn't that pantheism? Why isn't that there's Hashem in the table, there's Hashem in the rock? Then we'll talk about it. But that is Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna. So Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna is more of a theoretical work on the yesodos and nature of Hashem and Hashem's unity, as opposed to Sefer Shel Beinonim, which is more focused on the avoda of me as an individual. Now, I've heard it said, I believe I saw it even by the Rebbe himself, that logically, Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna should be learned first, because how can you be an Eved Hashem until you understand, to some degree, what Hashem is? But Lamaisa, the Seder is not that way, and the Rebbe didn't write it that way. Because the Rebbe said, the Alter Rebbe felt that your ability to understand Yichud Hashem is a function of you getting connected to Avodas Hashem by your mitzvahs and by your Avodah. And it's like Nase V'Nishma. By doing the Torah, you then come to understand. So that's all there was. So the original Tanya that the Alter Rebbe printed was Sefer Shel Beinonim and then Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna. Now, after the Alter Rebbe died and the Tanya was reprinted by his sons and by other people, they added various other writings to the Tanya. And they added the third chelik of Tanya is called Igeres HaTshuva. It's a long essay by the Alter Rebbe on the union of Tshuva. And then they added Igeres HaKodesh. I don't know why Igeres is Lashon Yachid, because really it's a collection of letters that the Rebbe wrote to his Hasidim, particularly about tzedakah, but also about not talking during davening. A lot of his very practical letters about the importance of learning and not talking, and etc. And then, finally, there were notations that the Rebbe made in the Tanya to correct or to add various things, and that is called Kuntris Achrei. But those three things were added after the Rebbe's death. From the Rebbe's writings. So, Tanya originally had two chalakim, Sefer Shel Beinonim, Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna, And later, three more things were added, Igeres HaTshuva, Igeres HaKodesh, and the Kuntres Acharon. And those five chalokim are what is called Sefer HaTanya. Now, why is it called Sefer HaTanya? The Rebbe did not use the word Tanya at all, because Tanya is the first word of the Sefer, because he quotes a Braisa, Tanya B'Sayf Perakim Odenida. So it became known as Sefer HaTanya. Now that's a bit of a weak reason, although that seems to be the logical reason. It was not the title that the Alter Rebbe gave to the book, so why don't we use his titles? So the Tzemach Tzedek, who was the Alter Rebbe's grandson, the third Chabad Rebbe, brings from some source, strangely enough, that Tanya, although Tanya is a word in the Gemara, meaning we learned in Ebraisa, but Tanya is also the Kabbalistic name for a very destructive Kalipa, a very destructive negative spiritual force that is there to block our ability to access and understand mystical ideas. So Tanya is kind of that which negates your ability to incorporate and understand inyanim of Kabbalah, and therefore the Rebbe wanted to fight that klipa by using the word Tanya and then, you know, throwing all of the Kabbalistic ideas to get rid of the darkness of that klipa. That so says the Tzemach Tzedek. That's interesting that would be the name for a klipa would be Tanya. Okay. Now, after the shar, after the cover page, okay, some of these are just printer's notices, we could skip that. It is important to look at the haskamos. What are haskamos? Even today, right? When a person writes a sefer, you try to get letters from eminent rabbis who give a hechsherat. Especially, so I want to say too, that the first printing of the Tanya, yeah, let me explain this. The very first printing of the Tanya was anonymous, meaning Rav Shneur Zalman did not put his name on it. If he would have put his name on it, perhaps there would have been less of a need for a haskama. But this is an anonymous person is publishing a sefer on Avodas Hashem, so it's important to have letters from rabbis that can say this is a reliable source. So you'll notice in the haskamos, they refer to him in very, very glowing terms. Harav Hagon, Ish Elokim, Kadosh V'Tohar. But they do not mention his name. Because at the time that these haskamos were issued, the sefer was printed anonymously. So obviously, his chassidim knew who it was because the Tanya was a printing of things that had already circulated in manuscript. But at least to the general public, it was unknown. Now, I'm not going to read all the haskamos. The haskamos, more or less, are relatively undramatic. But the identity is important. One haskama is from Meshulam Zushal Mianapoli. This is actually the Zushal is Zusha. This is the famous Rav Zusha, of which there are many, many from Annapolis. Annapolis was a town in the Ukraine. Rav Zusha of Annapolis was a Talmud of the Maggid of Mezerich, and of course we have so many famous Rav Zusha stories. Two famous Rav Zusha stories that people say. One is his statement that after 120 years, Hashem is not going to ask me why wasn't I Avram Avinu or why wasn't I Moshe, because I can always answer, I wasn't created with those abilities. But what I'm really afraid of is, why wasn't I Zusha? And that is the question I will not be able to answer. That's one very famous teaching of Rav Zusha. The second famous story is that someone asked the Maggid of Mezerich, the Mishnah says in Brachos that a person has to bless Hashem for the bad things that happen in life, just as they bless Hashem for the good things that happen in life. He says, I don't understand, how can a person be makabel the bad just like he's makabel the good? I don't understand how that's possible. So the Maggid of Mezerich says, go to my Talmud Rav Zusha, he will give you an answer to that question. So he goes to Rav Zusha. Rav Zusha is living in a shack. The kids are running around without food, without clothes. Abject poverty, nothing, you know, nothing is good. And he says to Rav Zusha, he says, the Rebbe said I'm supposed to ask you, how can you bless Hashem for the bad like you bless Hashem for the good? And he said, to ask you. So Rav Zusha scratches his head and says, I really don't understand why you come to me. Nothing bad's ever happened. And that essentially was the answer, to kind of understand. Gamzu L'Tova is not just things will get better, but your markish, everything. Everything is good and positive in your matzah. So this is the famous Rav Zusha. It's interesting, though, that you see, if Rav Zusha is giving a haskama, see, we sometimes think about some of these figures as kind of like simple people, nice people, but they were not great and eminent scholars. But you see, if Rav Zusha is giving a haskama, he must have been regarded as very, very significant person. He wasn't just a nice guy, so to speak. And he wrote the haskama. And again, he talks about, again, he calls the Rav Shneur Zalman, without mentioning my name, because he respected the anonymity, Harav Hagon Ish Elokim Kadosh V'Tahor Aspaklaria HaMe'ira. Now remember, this is the phrase we use about Moshe Rabbeinu. All the prophets saw God through an aspaklaria, a lens that is not clear, opaque, or not fully transparent. But Moshe Rabbeinu saw Hashem, or saw, perceived godliness, through aspaklaria HaMe'ira. So Rav Zusha says, this person who wrote this sefer is the aspaklaria HaMe'ira. He is the clear lens through which you perceive godliness and kedusha. He then says that no one can reprint this book for 5 years without the permission, etc. That this was very common. This was kind of the equivalent of a copyright, because in those days especially, printing is less expensive today because you can do things by computer and it's not such a big deal. But in the days when you had to set type, movable type, etc., so there was a considerable investment of money in printing. So it was common in Haskamos to basically say, the printer or the author has the exclusive right to publish this book for 5 years. Nobody can compete without permission, etc. And the second haskama is from a person, Yehuda Leif HaKohen. Again, this is a little less known, but he is described again as a guy that's very meforsam, and he also describes the Baal HaTanya in extremely positive ways. And the third haskama came later. The third haskama was not for the first. These first two came when the Tanya was anonymous and the Alter Rebbe was still alive. The third haskama came after the Alter Rebbe died. And it's not really a haskama because it is a letter written by the Alter Rebbe's children. Now, obviously, they were not giving a haskama on their father's work, but they were giving a haskama on the printer who wanted to reprint the Tanya. And they describe how much their father worked and put into this book, etc. And there are three sons. The first son of the Alter Rebbe is the oldest, Dov Ber. And Dov Ber became the second Rebbe of Chabad. Dov Ber is the same name as the Maggid of Mezerich. The Baal HaTanya named his oldest son, the Zecher Nishmas, his Rebbe of Dov Ber. And this became the Rebbe, who was only Rebbe for a very short time, called the Mittler Rebbe. The Mittler Rebbe is the middle Rebbe, because the Baal HaTanya was a Rebbe for many years, and the grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek, was a Rebbe for many years. The Mittler Rebbe was only a Rebbe for a very short time. He's called the middle Rebbe. There is a beautiful story they say about the Mittler Rebbe. The Mittler Rebbe was a great, great Mekubal who was totally mashuka, totally engrossed. When he would learn, it was like the world did not exist. He was totally misulat from the world. But the story goes that when he had a child, the baby was crying, and he didn't even hear the baby crying because he was so engrossed. And the Baal HaTanya, who you can rest assured was also engrossed in whatever he was doing, came down and took care of the baby. And then he told his son, you have to remember, no matter how involved you are, you can't ignore the crying baby. Of course, the crying baby also meant the crying Jew. that you have to remember. The other thing they say about the Mittler Rebbe was quite amazing. Two things I remember now. One thing was, he refused to get an aliyah the whole year. He only went up with the children on Simchas Torah. Because he said he was ashamed to stand before Hashem. When you get an aliyah, you're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. He said he was ashamed. But with the children, when all the children go, he'll go too with the children. This was the madrega that he was. But then they tell another story. I'm not sure how the story is, almost a little inconsistent. That when we read the Tokacha, the minhag is we don't call up a person to the Tokacha. Either the Baal Kori reads it or whatever. But it said that the Mittler Rebbe, during the lifetime of his father, used to come up. His father was the Baal Kori, and the Mittler Rebbe used to get the aliyah for the Tokacha. And they asked him, why do you lie? He says, you don't go up for curses. He says, when my father reads it, it doesn't seem to be a curse. When my father reads these psukim, I feel the bracha that's coming through those psukim, even in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's own Shem and the like. Yet I don't know how you reconcile the two stories, but maybe. I think in the lifetime is I think that was it. In the lifetime of his father made him get aliyahs, whatever it would be. After his father was nifter, he said he stopped taking any aliyahs. This is the Mittler Rebbe. That's the first son, and then the two others were also very very chashuv. Talmidei Chachamim, Chaim Avram. The third son, Moshe. Okay, maybe I shouldn't talk about this one. The third son is a bit of a controversial. History is a bit of a hidden history. He may have had some medical problems, even psychological issues. So the history of Moshe, the third son of the Alter Rebbe, is a bit of a mystery. Ad Hayom Hazeh. Also, I see that the Lubavitch Rebbe, the last Rebbe, he tried to be Medayak. Each of them referred to their fathers by a different title. And each of them identified themselves as the son of Rav Shneur Zalman. So Rav Dov Baer, who became the Rebbe, says, Adoni Avi, Mori V'Rebbe, Hagon HaChassid, Kadosh Yisrael, Marana V'Rabana. Okay. The next one, Rav Chaim Avram, Adoni Avi, Mori V'Rebbe, Hagon HaChassid, he leaves out Kadosh Yisrael, and he says, Marana V'Rabana. So that's everything except Kadosh Yisrael. And then the third son, Adoni Avi Mori V'Rebbe, Hagon HaChassid, he left out even Marana V'Rabana. So each one leaves out, each one gets progressively less. So it's hard to know exactly. The Rebbe gave some type of pshat. He says, Kadosh Yisrael is the title that's most appropriate to a Hasidic Rebbe. So therefore, since Rav Dov Baer became the successor Rebbe, he wanted to emphasize, I'm nothing compared to my father. I'm not the Kadosh Yisrael. He is the Kadosh Yisrael. Rav Chaim Avram was a posek, so the posek is Marana V'Rabana, the teacher, so he wanted to emphasize, my father is the teacher. And Moshe was less involved, even in Psak, he just says, go and HaKhasad. It's hard to know exactly what all of these Cheshbainas are. But this is simply a letter from the son. One final thought before I actually start the Tanya proper. And that is, the Tzemach Tzedek, who was the Rav Shneur Zalman's grandson, he was a nephew of the Mittler Rebbe. He was not, the Mittler Rebbe's children did not become Rebbe's, but he was a grandson. Tzemach Tzedek, through a daughter, was the grandson of the Baal HaTanya. And he was very close to the Baal HaTanya. He spent really hundreds, if not thousands, of hours learning from the Baal HaTanya. So he writes that he once came to see his grandfather, and his grandfather was very shakua. He was sitting at a desk, very shakua. He was actually writing the Tanya at the time, actually writing it. And he asked his grandfather, something particularly difficult here. So he says, I've been sitting here for 3 weeks, and I can't figure out if I should put a vav in front of a word, an and, or not have an and. Should it be like a new sentence, or should it be a vav, a connective? And he said, every letter he writes in the Tanya, he has the whole Sefer in his mind. He asks himself, how will this letter fit with the structure of the whole Sefer? That's how meduyak it was. He does say that it took the Alter Rebbe 20 years to write the Tanya. I mean, he was doing other things as well. He called it Sefer Shel Beinonim. And he said in Yiddish, for Beinonim, meaning for the Sefer Shel Beinonim, it's kedai to spend 6 weeks per letter. Every letter, you know, 6 weeks before you write a single letter. So this is something that's very, very carefully composed. Now, the thing is that although in most places today, Tanya is known as a Chabad work, a work only for Lubavitch, but that's not how it was regarded, even during the Rebbe's lifetime. This was a sefer that was looked at and cherished by people who were Oisek in Avodas Hashem. It wasn't only a Lubavitcher sefer. Just as Shulchan Aruch Harav was not only for Lubavitch, this was not for Lubavitch either. Now we know in more recent years, Rav Dessler was a big Talmud of Tanya. He considered to be a sefer yisod in Avodas Hashem. And now I think in recent years it actually got also a bit more popular beyond. For many, many years it was kind of only a Lubavitch sefer. I shouldn't say only a Chabad sefer, because it is a Chabad sefer. I mean, Chabad as a shita, this is of course a Chabad sefer. That this is the sefer that created the concept called Chabad. But it was not a Lubavitch sefer per se. For many years it became a Lubavitch sefer. Now I think, Baruch Hashem, it's broken out. Back to where it was, a sefer that belongs to Klal Yisrael. Yeah.
You said that it was published anonymously.
Printed,
that
yeah.
That received haskamas from Meshulam Zusha of Napoli and Yehuda Lev Cohen.
Yep.
Those two published Sforum prior to the publication of the Tanya?
I don't believe that they published that any Sforum either. But they were known. Apparently they were well known, at least among Hasidim. Again, I don't really know how well regarded these rabbis were in non-Hasidic communities. But among Hasidim, they were well regarded.
And do we know whether there were contemporary Gedolim within reach that he could have visited that might have given him haskamas?
It's hard to know. For example, why didn't he get a haskama from the Berditchever? You know, that I don't know. Berditchever was a very well-known Rav, known among the Misnagdim as well. Now, the Rebbe points out, and I think there's good evidence to it, that the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim of Rav Chaim of Volozhin that was published later, the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, a lot of what he is addressing is responses to the Tanya. He does not quote the Tanya per se. But the Rebbe says a lot of what he's writing is either to agree with the Tanya or to disagree with the Tanya. But it is a very specific reference to the teachings of Tanya. And therefore, in a sense, there's kind of a literary dialogue between those two Svarim. In fact, there was a famous, not famous, but a great, great Rav in Baltimore way before my time, but he was a great chaver of my Rosh Hashiva of Ritterman, Rav Farshlanger, Rav Michal Farshlanger, who, again, it was kind of a sad in a way. He was a guy in Eilam, in Kola Tarikula, and he was a Rav of a shul in Baltimore, but of course there were no yeshivas then. This is before there was an Eretz Yisrael. And in America, Bechal, there were no yeshivas. He died in the 30s. But
Torah
Das existed in New York, but outside of New York, there came out where nothing. Yes, that's correct. But Rav Farshlanger's, although he was a Gaon Olam, basically he had a shul of people who were Amoratsim, basically. Most of them were not Shomer Shabbos, some were Shomer Shabbos. So Rav Farshlanger was a Gaon Olam, and he was a Mekubal as well. So he got a bookbinder to bind together the Nefesh HaChaim and the Tanya in one binding, because he felt you have to learn the two Svarim together. Now, in truth, the Lubavitcher Rebbe actually agreed. The Lubavitcher Rebbe talked a lot about how the Nefesh HaChaim and the Tanya, so they work together so well. Ad Kedei Kach, that his brother-in-law, Rav Gerari, said to him, kind of mockingly, "Oh, you're going to tell Hasidim to learn Nefesh HaChaim?" So the Rebbe said, "That's not such a bad idea." I don't think he did publicly, but he said it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because again, the Rebbe had a shita. Well, okay, it gets complicated in a lot of things. The Rebbe had a shita that Rav Chaim Volozhiner modified the views of the Vilna Gaon to be more consistent with the Tanya. Okay, this was the Rebbe shita. That's the Nefesh HaChaim and the Tanya were consistent, even if the Vilna Gaon was chaylik on many things. So obviously Rav Shneur Zalman didn't get a haskama from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. That would have been impossible in light of the machlokas in Hasidus and Misnagdim at the time. But still, it's very clear, the Rebbe says, and I think it seems right, that Rav Chaim Volozhiner was very familiar with the Tanya and utilized it in various ways.
The Rebbe mentioned that for a time this was not a like only for the Baal Sefer, and the Rebbe thinks of its return to that. What happened in the interim?
Why did it become only the Baal Sefer? Part of it was I don't want to get into all the politics and things. Part of it was as Lubavitch became a bit more separate. So too, people began to separate themselves from Lubavitch. Now you could say, chicken or egg? Is it we separated from Lubavitch? Lubavitch separated from us? But as there was a separation, so Mimela, there was kind of a guilt by association, or anything connected with Chabad, you know, got to be no good.
Yeah.
And the Rebbe himself was again. The Rebbe spoke all the time. The Rebbe said that he wanted people. He would say, he says, you don't have to be Lubavitch. You don't have to be a Chassid. You don't have to be anything. But the Tanya is a sefer yisod in Avodas Hashem. And the Rebbe said, I'm not trying to make anybody Lubavitch, he says, but to learn this sefer, it's a good thing to learn.
What was the reason for the anonymity when he published it in Mishnah?
My guess is anava. My guess was humility. He didn't, you know, he wanted to bring out the teachings, and he was not interested in the peers. Now, as I say, I don't know how successful the anonymity was to begin with, because as I say, these were kundresim that had already circulated in Ksav Yad, and the only reason for printing, the Rebbe said, was because mistakes got introduced and the like. So a lot of the people who read the printed version knew who the author was, and I'm sure they told other people who the author was. So I'm not sure if anonymity was ever obtained, but in theory he wanted to be anonymous.
When the Chofetz Chaim published his first sefer, the Chofetz Chaim, he published that anonymously.
That's right, that's correct.
I don't remember what the haskamas were. Do you have any idea who gave haskamas?
I think he had a haskama from the Netziv. I don't know if we have
some well-known published.
There was some well-known, I think maybe Vitzik Ochon Inspector. He had some very famous Litvisher Rabbanim.
Right.
I don't know if there's a sefer on Chofetz Chaim here, but... they're well known. I mean, some of the names we haven't heard. You know, you have to understand that the truth of the matter is, a lot of Gedolim, if they didn't write Svarim, they're not remembered. They were very, very great. There were people who were very, very great, but we don't know that much about them because they haven't left Svarim that we're learning. So some of the Gedolim, like, you wouldn't have heard of except for seeing them in the Haskama. But they were still very, very good. If the Chofetz Chaim went to them, they must have been very, very esteemed Gedolim. Okay, so we then come to the Hakdama. We then come to the introduction. And the Alter Rebbe calls this Hakdamas HaMelaket. So again, he's very consistent in his terminology. Since he did not call himself the author of this book, because the book is called Likutei Amorim. Likutei Amorim means a collection of statements. So consistent with how he described the book in the Shar, he doesn't call himself Mechaber, he calls himself Malaket, the gatherer, right? He keeps that the same. But this is described as Igeres Hashlucha, a letter that I am sending Lichlolos Anshei Shalomenu. I am sending it, right, this is Anash, right? Maybe you've heard the term in Chabad. Anash, right, everyone knows. I remember once, you know, one of the great, I'll say in a second, because one of the great Hasidim in Chabad, who's really a Zogain and a great Talmud Chacham, is Rav Yoel Kahn. Rav Yoel Kahn is already very, very, I mean, I don't know if he's in his 90s, but he's a big Zogain. Very, very venerable. Maybe, again, I'm not an expert in this either, but he might be the greatest, like, Bucky and in Chabad Hasidus and on all levels.
He was the Chayzer.
He was the Chayzer for the Rebbe, too. Yeah. He has a photographic memory, but he really knows a lot. And in fact, he actually has a Litvish background, too. You know, he learned with some of the people who are now Rosh Hashivas in Panovich. In fact, there was an article a few years ago, he came to Eretz Yisrael and he got reunited with his old Chaverim who are Rosh Hashivas in Panovich. So I was once at I was over to have Shabbos by Rav Yoel many years ago. So Rav Yoel was always surrounded by Hasidim that always want to know his take on this and that and that and that. And so they started asking all the time, "What do you say about people who are not Anash? You know, should we talk to people who are not Anash?" And you know, he got very annoyed. He said, "Anash, Anash, everyone's talking Anash," you know, like as if you know. He says, "There are Yidden and there are Goyim. You know, what's Anash, Anash?" So he was actually making fun of it because they turned it into like a separate nation. Like there's the nation of Anash, but the phrase Anash is just a Rashi Teva for the Alter Rebbe's own language here. Anshei Shalomenu means the people of our fellowship. Our group, the people who we learn together, we grow together, we shteig together, right? So you could describe people of the yeshiva. We are Anash, Anshei Shlomenu, etc. Okay, so it's not meant to be an excluding, you know, Anash, only Anash, you know, but it's the people that respond, that we work together, we grow together. And here is the letter that he writes. Now again, this letter was written in the manuscript already. This letter was not only for the printed. When the Tanya was sent out, there was a letter. And the Rebbe apologizes for, why am I writing? Why don't I talk to you? Why am I sending you letters and writings? And he points out very honestly, you know, people say that eino daima, there's no comparison between a Rebbe talking to somebody and you having to read a Musar Sefer. And he says, a Musar Sefer or a Sefer of Avodas Hashem, whatever that means, does not have the same effect as a Rebbe directly talking to you. And he gives a few reasons why the written word does not have the same effect. One reason is that sometimes our own minds are not working as well. We might be anxious, we might be tense, we might be tired. We might not be able to concentrate very well. So I'm looking at a sefer and it doesn't enter me because I'm not in a condition where I can really absorb it. As opposed to somebody directly talking to me, that gets me more connected. That's one issue. Another issue, he says, is that even if everything I have is functioning, even if, you know, I'm on all cylinders and the like, but what inspires one person is not the same thing that inspires another person. Everybody has a different aspect in their neshama that connects them to Hashem. So when I'm a Rebbe speaking to you face to face, I can kind of tailor what I'm going to say to what is ma'orer you. When I'm writing something, I'm taking a one-size-fit-all approach. So what works for one person may not work for the other person. So the Rebbe apologizes. The Rebbe says, I understand that people are going to say, hey, writing this sefer, one size fit all, is not the same as meeting with me individually. It's not the same thing. But the Rebbe says, the Rebbe apologizes. He says, Baruch Hashem, there are so many people. It's not possible to meet with everybody. And then the Rebbe says, and also I want you to know that I know you. I'm speaking to people. Now again, the question is, how does that apply to us? Well, the Rebbe didn't know, but the Rebbe, at least at this point, is saying, I know the people for whom I'm writing. I know your struggles. I know your problems. I know your issues. And in this sefer will be the answers to all of the issues that you have in Avodas Hashem. And if you don't understand how you get the answers, then go to the gedolim, meaning they go to the elders in the city, and they will make the connection between the written word and how it applies to you. And he then says to the zakenim, he says, it is not permitted for you to be modest. Don't pretend you don't understand. Like you say, oh, why are you asking me? You know, who am I? You know, I'm nothing. He says that's a very big avera. If your fake modesty, if your fake modesty prevents you from giving a person illumination and enlightenment in Torah. So he basically says that I understand the problems people have in Avodas Hashem, and this is a sefer that is designed to directly talk about those problems. Again, I don't want to underestimate this. This is a very important point. Because he's actually saying very befeirish that this is not a book of theory. This is a very important book, Lamaisa, because it is dealing with the spiritual problems a person has. It's not like, for example, I'm going to give an example. If you wanted to know, like, you know, why did God bring the Holocaust? No question, good question, sir. How do you know there's God? How do you know the Torah is Min HaShamayim? This is not a sefer that deals with that. In other words, by the time you come to Tanya, you believe in Hashem. You believe in Torah Shebal Mechsav. You believe in Torah Shebal Peh. You even believe, at least intellectually, everything Hashem does is for the good. This is not dealing with those types of issues. We have other swarm that deals with those type of issues. This is addressed to a maimon. Every one of his chassidim was a maimon. Again, we have records of private conversations where the Rebbe talked to people who didn't have emunah. But this is not a sefer to convince somebody to be a maimon, to convince somebody to be a yid. This is a sefer dealing with a different set of problems. I'm tzibrachet, I'm struggling, I don't feel love of Hashem in my heart, even though I believe in Hashem. And I've been working so many years, and I still can't get over my yetzer hara. And my mind wanders when I daven. And how do I focus? How do I get joy in my Torah learning? Those are the questions. You see, it's not like, what does the Torah say about evolution, or whatever it is. So although it's true, because Rav Shneur Zalman had a very intellectual approach, Chabad, that he goes through these questions in a very intellectual way, and that kind of is the Litvisha temperament that he was addressing anyway. But in reality, these are questions that we really would talk about, the emotional dilemmas and conflicts that people have. This emerges from his counseling with Hasidim. He counseled Hasidim for many, many years. He noticed that people who were Ovdei Hashem, who were serious about Avodas Hashem, seemed to have the same types of problems. And he is fashioning a response to give people a chizuk in dealing with those problems. Okay, you have to remember this, because although Tanya is written as a theoretical book, it is very, very much geared to these practical issues. This is what the Rebbe says. This is my counsel, and what I write here, every chassid should regard it as if I am sitting there talking to you and telling you, helping you, how you should, you know, how you should respond and how you should grow. And that's why he uses the phrase that even though Svarim may not be as the same as the Rebbe speaking, but b'yayda yumakirai ka'amina, but I am talking to the people I know and the people I recognize. Now, of course, one could say, as I say, as a skeptic, well, okay, that was a true statement vis-a-vis the chassidim that the Rebbe knew. No. How am I supposed to read that? I mean, the Rebbe gives me a whole argument here why the written word is not the same as the Rebbe talking. He then says, but he knows the people he's talking to. Okay, he knew those people. He doesn't know me. right? So the Rebbe kind of gave me a kasha, which he didn't answer, but got me. But again, the idea would be that at least in a type of a Ruach HaKodesh level, the Rebbe understood the different struggles that people face. And in that way, he addresses things. But as I say, the Rebbe himself said, you still need the human factor. Right? That's, he called them the Gedolim of the new city, that the person needs the Godol, called Mashkiach, Mashpia, Rebbe, whatever term you're going to use, who can bridge the gap between the written word and how you apply it, Lamaisa. In other words, the Rebbe is Makir, that there's going to be a certain gap between the best Sefer and how you apply it to your life in and of itself. Okay. I'm sorry, someone had a... Yeah.
It's called Likutei Amorim.
Yeah.
I understood that as a collection of sayings.
Yes.
And does he have any references as to where these sayings come from, or the assumption is that they're really his sayings?
Well, first of all, it's not written as an anthology, because it's written
right.
as a prose book.
Right.
It has many quotations, and he usually tells you where the quotations are from, and certainly in the newer Tanyas, if he doesn't, they have footnotes that tell you where everything is from. But you have to understand, this is true for many Mechaber, not just the Rebbe, even when he is not quoting something. You know, language that he uses is based on, for example, we read in the Shara, Derech Arucha Kitzara. Now, there's no footnote there to the Medrash Eicha, at least that the Rebbe put in. So, even when he doesn't tell you he's quoting something, there will often be quotations. But this is true for many Gedolim. Many Gedolim, when they write, virtually everything is actually an adaptation from either Tanakh or a Chazal or a Kabbalah. Or something of that.
Is he stirring things up a little bit more than because we see from the Mesulas Yesharim, he doesn't say, go ahead and ask every single letter of the Vilna Gaon this special. You can read the Mesulas Yesharim slowly again and again,
yeah.
And you don't need to go to a rabbi necessarily. Everything is there, but here he must be stirring something up. If you have to go to a rabbi, you don't have answers. You see what I'm saying? Contrasted with
that. Yeah, I understand. But I think, if anything, he's emphasizing that Avodas Hashem, you have to have a Rebbe. And I think non-Hasidim would agree to that as well. Meaning, this is a problem we face today with online. Everything's online, right? So you can have virtual community, virtual rabbi, virtual posek, virtual minion. Everything is virtual. And the Yesod HaDvarim is that even when we write things down, you need a physical connection. You need a physical connection. The last Lubavitcher Rebbe would actually say that everybody has to have a Rav. In other words, it's not enough to have the Rebbe who doesn't know you, and the Rebbe gives general guidelines for things, but you need a specific person to be Mekasher. Rabbi Saul Salanter once said, Chassidim and Misnagdim both make a mistake in opposite directions. Chassidim think all they need is the Rebbe, and Misnagdim think they don't need a Rebbe. And he said they're both making a mistake. He says you need a Rebbe, but you also have to work on yourself too. You can't just have the Rebbe make every decision for you.
Does one's halacha really differ from one's hashkafa?
It absolutely can. Because people have different types of expertise. Ideally, it's good to have the same person, I think. But lamaisa, someone could be very good in technical halacha, but they may not be the madrich in a person's derech of avodah Hashem. Now, again, I don't mean you go shopping around, I like his approach. To movies, and I like this person's approach. Whatever, it's not what we're talking about. But halacha and the derech avodah are two different things. And again, a very good example would be in Chassidus itself. The Rebbe is often not going to be the posek. In Chabad, it was that way. The Rebbe did not. The Rebbe was a great, great Talmud Chacham, but he very infrequently would paskin. He had morei hora, and that's true for any Chassidus movement came out. And even in the yeshiva world, often a Rosh Yeshiva will not be the actual posek of halacha. Right, a posek and a Rosh Yeshiva are two different functions. Rav Shach, who was considered to be among the Lispashi Rosh Yeshivas, the Gadol Hador, Rav Shach with Derech Klal did not paskin. I mean, you wouldn't ask Rav Shach about refrigerators on Shabbos, or whatever it would be. I'm sure Rav Shach could tell you, but whatever. That was not what he got involved in that much. So you can separate the two, for sure. Okay. Alrighty.
Was Rabbi Yaakov Emden a contemporary of the publication of the Talmud, or
Let's figure out the date here. I see that at least the Haskama of the Tanya, the first printing, was Tuf Kuf Nun Vav. So that's what? 500? Like 5,556. So how many years ago was that?
That's like
130
years. So I'll tell you, I mean, I happen to know, because this date sticks in my mind, Rabbi Yaakov Emden died in 1776, the year of the United States. that's why I always remember Rabbi Yaakov Emden's year, at least the secular year. So what year was that?
This is 223 years ago.
Yeah, so how many, so what year was that?
He died before, long before this was published.
He died before, yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Rabbi Yaakov Emden died when the Vilna Gaon was a young man, that's correct. Now we know, of course, that in the Baal HaTanya's lifetime there was the great machlokas between Misnagdim and Hasidim, and the Vilna Gaon, who was very usually very not involved in controversies, got involved, and various parts of Hasidus were put into cherem and excommunicated in different cities. There were prohibitions against even what's called intermarriage. You couldn't marry into the Hasidic world and the like. And the Maggid, this is during the Maggid's lifetime, the Maggid had sent, this is before the Tanya was written, the Maggid had sent the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman, to talk to the Gra, and the Gra refused to meet with him. And unfortunately, when the Vilna Gaon was Nipter a few years later, there were Hasidim that were rejoicing, both Chabad and non-Chabad, and the Baal HaTanya was mamish. He wanted to throw them out. He basically said, Chas v'shalom, and he says, and then he said to them very sharply, he says, and if you think this is going to make things easier, you have it wrong, because now he's going to fight us min ha-shamayim. He says, it's going to be tougher, he said, not going to be easier. And they tell a story, I think that it may even be from the Baal HaTanya, I'm not sure though, but because it may have been made up, that when the Vilna Gaon was Nifter, it was decided he had no Averis, he goes straight to the Olam Haba, but his only Averis was he never heard a Hasidish Maimer. So it was decreed. He has to hear one Hasidish Maimer, or he has to go to Gehenna for 1 second.
Or come back again.
Well, that they didn't say. Gehenna, 1 second. So the Vilna Gaon said, I'll take Gehenna. So as he was going to Gehenna, the billions and billions and billions of blocks of Gemara formed a solid wall that totally, totally protected him. So the Alter Rebbe says, he escaped Gehenna and he didn't have to hear a Hasidic Shemayim. He escaped everything. But the story goes that what was the Vilna Gaon's Hakpada? I want to talk about this a little bit. Now this didn't last that long. The whole big, big fighting and animosity and public disputations and debates. By the time Rav Chaim Volozhiner started the Volozhiner Yeshiva, which was shortly after the death of the Vilna Gaon, he took Hasidic boys into the yeshiva. Number two, he even mentioned Hasidic Sfarim. Certainly his son Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin has Hasidic Sfarim. There were delegations between Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin and the Tzemach Tzedek, who worked together against the Tsarist decrees in Russia. They worked together. So it's very, very clear. And you have to explain this, because if the Vilna Gaon put a cherem, how could Rav Chaim Volozhiner just ignore it? It's not clear how that worked. But one thing is very clear. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the Talmud Muvik of the Gra, felt at this time that we could work with Hasidim, we can embrace them, we can be together with them, then apparently he certainly took the position that the Cheirim was not in effect anymore. That must be the way he understood it. So what was the Vilna Gaon's problem and the other problems? So there were a few different problems. Some of the problems were behavioral, and some of the problems were more philosophical. The behavioral problem was that the Gross saw in Hasidus, the Hasidus, and again, I'm not talking about the Baal HaTanya in particular, I'm talking about all types of Hasidus. Different Talmidim, the Maggid had different Hanhagas. Number one, the good part of Hasidus was it emphasized Avas Yisrael, it emphasized Achdus, it emphasized every Jew has a connection to Hashem, even if you weren't a big Talmud Chacham. That's a wonderful thing. Hashem loves everybody. That's a great thing. But the Vilna Gaon was afraid that this could result in a de-emphasis of Torah learning, that Torah learning is not so important. The most important thing is you have a good heart, etc. And not only could Chas V'Shalom de-emphasize Torah learning, but it theoretically could even de-emphasize mitzvahs. Because a person might say the following: if the ikar thing in Avodas Hashem is my Avas Hashem and my Yiras Hashem, then why is it so important whether I keep the halacha this way or that way? Let's say Zman Kriyashma is 9 o'clock. But 9 o'clock, I'm still tired. And if I say Kriyashma before 9 o'clock, it's going to be fast and superficial. But if I get myself some geshmak, an extra hour and a half of sleep, when I come in at 11:30, be so much kavana, I'm going to rip shamayim with my... You understand the problem? The problem is that when you emphasize subjective spirituality, sometimes halacha can turn into a bunch of detail that maybe is not so important. So the Gra was chayshesh, that the emphasis of internal spirituality might be at the expense of intensive Torah learning and might be at the expense of shmiras hamitzvahs. Now, in reality, this was not just a speculation. Not the Rabbanim themselves, not the Rabbeim, but there were Hasidim that indeed were going that way. Some of them were drinking, some of them were getting drunk, public drunkenness, other types of things in which they said...
Dancing around the streets.
The drunkenness is an expression of our Kirvas Elokim. In fact, look at some of the videos of Uman, and you see a little bit of that. a little bit of that today, kind of where the Meshugas becomes.
A of what?
Huh?
Of Uman.
Uman. You see what's going on, what goes on in Uman. Although it's not the whole picture. I mean, again, it's an amazing thing. Based on what I see, I would definitely tell a person, you go to Uman, you're crazy. On the other hand, I have to be honest. I've spoken to. Balei Avoda that have gone to Uman, and they have described it in a very, very positive way. So there are going to be two sides. Obviously, YouTube, you're not going to film the boring videos of people learning and davening. There's nothing interesting in that. But the idea of the somersaults and the dancing and the drunkenness, this was something that existed, and the Gra was very, very concerned. That was the behavioral aspect.
And also davening after the...
Davening after the Zman, which is still, even to this day, that's a certain problem. Right? So the Gra basically didn't disagree with the positive things that Hasidus was doing, but he saw it as a sakana to very, very important ideas. Philosophically, there was more of an arcane controversy, and that is the nature of Tzimtzum. This is where the Shar Yichud V'Yamuna gets very, very controversial. The Arizal already raised this big question. Hashem is everywhere. So how can there be a table? How can there be me? I mean, is Hashem where I am? Right? How do you understand Hashem being everywhere and there being a physical world? So the Ari developed an idea called Tzimtzum that quite literally means contraction. That in order to make room for everything else, Hashem had to fold into himself, Hashem had to contract into himself, and he vacated, he created a chalal, he created a vacuum, an emptiness, and in the chalal he projected light, the light of the Ein Sof from which everything is Nishtal Shel, everything is developed. So quite, again, just taking it very literally, how does Hashem make room? He sucks his stomach in and makes room. Right? He makes the room. So the question is, what does that mean exactly? So the Gra, I'm just going to say the words, I'm not really going to explain it because it is very deep, very complicated, and I am not a great expert either. But just in terms of vocabulary, the Gra espoused a position that is called Tzimtzum Kipshuto. You take Tzimtzum as literally as you can take it. Of course, Hashem is the Borei, Hashem is the creator, Hashem maintains creation. Nobody's arguing with that. There's nothing that exists without the Ratzon Hashem. But Hashem is not here. In order for this to be here, Hashem had to pull away. And the Gra held that it's Kipshutai Mamish. The Eibishter had to vacate the space, and then he's Borei, Umanik, all the Olamos. The Baal HaTanya in the Shaar HaYichud V'Emunah is chaylik on that very, 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 very strongly, because he quotes the pasuk in the Chumash, "Ein oid milvadei." There is right atar right atar reisul adas. You were shown ki Hashem hu Elokim. Hashem is the only God. Ein oid milvadei. Now, you could learn the pasuk just means there is no God besides God. Right, that would be maybe how the Gra would learn it. But the Baal HaTanya brings from the Baal Shem Tov, Ein od milvadai, there is nothing but God in the world. Ein od, there is no metzius. And therefore, quoting again from the Zohar, Les asar panui mine. That's what it says. There is no place that's panui, that's empty of it. And therefore there is godliness everywhere. And if tzimtzum is used by the Ari, it's a getter of a mashal. It's as if there's a tzimtzum, and that's why there's the appearance of a physicality that has some type of existence. But it's all an illusion. All there is the Metzius Hashem. Now, this may be an arcane controversy. You might say, what's the big nachkamin? I mean, everybody's moda, even the Gra's moda. Everything exists only because Hashem is creating it. The Gra is not saying once Hashem makes it, it exists by itself. So what's the big nafkamina? But this had a much bigger nafkamina than you might think, because the Gra held in some ways that the Baal HaTanya's shita was Avodah Zarah, because the Baal HaTanya is saying, I'm God, this is God, that's God, God is everything, everywhere. That's what's called a pantheism. And if you acknowledge that Hashem is not identical with every physical object, you have to assume Tzimtzum Kipshutai, and therefore the Gra held that the view of Tzimtzum was Kefira. The Baal HaTanya held the opposite, that the view that there can be anything in the world in which Hashem's presence is vacated is a denial of the omnipresence of the Almighty. Now, there's a machlokas to this very day in the Shaar Yichud V'Emunah. Now, the Baal HaTanya is normally very, very temperate. He does not attack in strong language. But the one place in the Tanya where he attacks as ignorant and wrong is in the Shaar Yichud V'Emunah, where he says, those who say Tzimtzum Kipshuto are ignorant and they're not. So the question is, who is he talking about? Who is he talking about? So some learn he's actually talking about the Vilna Gaon. Others say he's not. Others say he would never refer to the Vilna Gaon that way. He's referring to some other different shita. So this is still a machlokas exactly. Who was he attacking? But still, part of the Gra's cheirim was on the issue of tzimtzum. But the bulk of the cheirim was not on the tzimtzum issue. The bulk of the cheirim was on the behavioral excesses. Now, let me say, the behavioral excesses neither the Baal HaTanya nor his Hasidim were guilty of. Fakir, the whole idea of Chabad would be much more of a disciplined Hanhaga, and the Alter Rebbe himself was a great, great posek who insisted that people follow the Shulchan Aruch. And that is why I've always speculated, that is why the Magid's Bedatka sent the Baal HaTanya to the Gra, because, you know, if the Gra has a problem with the Hasidim that are getting drunk and dancing in the street, so you send the Rebbe whose Hasidim didn't get drunk and weren't dancing in the street. But Lanias Daiti, that's why the Grub of Africa didn't want to meet with the Baal HaTanya. Because if the Gra the Baal HaTanya could have agreed on 99% of everything. But that would have implied a haskama to what other Hasidim were doing. And that the Gra couldn't do. In other words, meeting with the Baal HaTanya would not have really meant he agreed with other things, but it would have been interpreted as that. And therefore he could not meet with him. Yeah.
Did the Baal HaTanya write or speak against the drunkenness type of issues?
Yes, he did. I mean, again, he didn't do it strongly in terms of attacking others because he didn't want to be mezalzel in other rabbeim and his other chaverim. But vis-a-vis his own chassidim, yeah. Vis-a-vis his own chassidim, he was very, very strict. In fact, he talked about it, this is the Igeres HaKodesh, he talks about many, many types of excesses. And he always emphasizes the importance of learning, of keeping halacha, of learning halacha. These were things that... Now, how Chabad developed later is another story. I'm not going to get into it.
Did he establish a yeshiva?
He did not. But the truth of the matter is there weren't that many yeshivas. Good. See, in those days, you have to understand, until Volozhin, there weren't that many yeshivas. There were local base medrashes, meaning to say in any base medrash, people would kind of sit around and learn. There wasn't necessarily structured yeshivas. Volozhin was one of the first yeshivas of the modern era, which was around this time. The first Chabad yeshiva was only in the 1920s. Tom Chetamimim, the Rebbe Rashab, Rav Sholom Ber, started the first yeshiva, his first Chabad yeshiva. Interestingly enough, you know who he wanted to have as Rosh Yeshiva? This is very fascinating. He approached Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was really the Gadol Hador. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik had been a co-Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin with the Nitziv. When Volozhin was closed by the Russian government, or because of the Russian government, Rav Chaim became the Rav of Brisk. His father had been the Rav of Brisk. And Rav Chaim was a great Rav, but Rav Chaim didn't really like Rav.
He actually left before because he couldn't get along.
No, the Beis HaLevi left before. The Beis HaLevi left before.
Thank you.
But Rav Chaim left with the Nitziv. The Nitziv died a few months later. The Beis HaLevi died shortly after that. So Rav Chaim became the Rav of Brisk. And Rav Chaim was a very distinguished Rav, although he hated the Paskin. It's very interesting. He hated the Paskin. Any Shaili that asked Rav Chaim, he got his dying to Paskin. Rav Chaim hated the Paskin, any halacha. But Rav Chaim was a great, great Rav. But Rav Chaim's heart was always being a Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Chaim's, people say, when they saw Rav Chaim in Volozhin, he was like happy and relaxed. His son was a Rav, he was always tense. So when the Rebbe Rashab offered him a position to be the Rosh Yeshiva of Tom Chetamimim, Rav Chaim said yes. Now that would have been a phenomenal catch to get Rav Chaim Soloveitchik to be a Rosh Yeshiva in a Hasidic Yeshiva.
Where was it?
Ukraine, I think.
Was it, you know where it was?
I think it was. Well, if Rebbe's saying the first one was
the
first institutionalized
yeshiva. Yeah, the first
yeshiva.
One, yeah.
Yeah, so that, I think it was in Ukraine, I believe.
Ukraine, okay. And Rav Chaim agreed.
If not Lubavitch itself.
Rav Chaim agreed, but the story goes that the Hasidim convinced the Rebbe Rashab that it wouldn't work out. Because they figured, you know, it has to be like one Rebbe. Rav Chaim was such a dominant figure that it would have been like having two Rebbes of very different hashkafas in some ways. So because of this, Rav Chaim didn't, he remained in Brisk.
Was there ever any overlap between the Magen Mezrich and the Vilna
Gaon? Yes, there was never an interaction between them, but their lives overlapped, for sure, because when the Magen was alive, when he sent the Baal HaTanya to talk to the Vilna Gaon, so the Magen was alive.
Like that.
This is before the Tanya was. Yeah, well, the Magid, as I said, the Magid was crippled. The Magid could not travel. He was home, you bound. So that's why he was sending Talmidim different places. By the way, the Magid of Mezrich, I'm not sure. The Magid of Mezrich also has a sefer that's called Likutei Amorim. I'm not sure if it was published after Tanya or not. It'd be interesting that Rav Shneur Zalman named his sefer the same as the Magid. Perhaps that would be a novel, but again, I don't know. But it could be that the Magid Svarim were printed afterwards.
That's the one that they print in Kahos, in that red sefer?
Yeah. So that's also the Magid. In fact, somewhat confusingly, The Bala Tanya had a Talmud Muvuk, and this was a bit of a succession problem. Rav Aaron of Staroshelce, who learned with the Bala Tanya for 30 years. And there was some thought that perhaps he would have been the successor rabbi instead of the Mittler rabbi, instead of the hereditary dynasty. And Rav Aaron of Staroshelce wrote a sefer called Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna, same name as Chelek Beis of the Tanya, which is a very, very deep sefer, very, very complicated and deep sefer. And many Hasidim wanted him to be, because he was the closest. He had learned. He had actually learned much more with the Alter Rebbe than the Alter Rebbe's own son. But it turned out that Chabad turned into more of a hereditary succession rather than going to the Talmud and the like. Okay. Alrighty. So maybe we'll stop here just today. Tonight was just to give you a little bit of the history. You know, I just want to end with one mashal. They tell a funny story to illustrate why the animosity between Hasidim and Misnagdim went down. Part of it was a common enemy. The Haskalah was a common enemy that would have destroyed religious Jewry. So Hasidim and Misnagdim worked together to fight the Haskalah. The Haskalah was more of a common enemy. They tell the story that there was a shidduch. A man had two daughters that he married off to two different guys, and he agreed to support them in learning. So one guy, he promised, you will get a hot fleishik meal every day. And the other guy, he made a promise, you'll get a hot milchik meal every day, linses and cheese. So they used to argue, I don't know if they ate at the same time or whatever, separate rooms, but they used to argue who's considered to be more respected, milchik, fleishik. So eventually, the father-in-law lost his parnasa. He could not afford milchiks, he could not afford fleishiks. He could only afford potatoes. But to keep his promise, one guy had the potatoes in a fleishik pot, and the other guy had the potatoes in a milchik pot. So what happened was, they were still fighting. I'm more chashuv than you. So the father-in-law finally says, listen, when you were eating real meat and you were eating real cheese, you could debate, you know, who's more chashuv. But now it's all potatoes. LMI, the potatoes has a little meat taste, and this potatoes has little milk taste. You know, it's all potatoes. So they say, when Hasidim were real Hasidim and Misnagdim were real Misnagdim, you can have machlokas. Now it's potatoes, a little Hasidisha flavor, a little Misnagdisha flavor. He says, people are not really strong in the shitas anymore. And therefore, there's no room for a machlokas. We've all kind of learned from the other, incorporated from the other, and therefore the feelings and the animosities are much less. But I said already, Lemaisa, historically, this already started from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. There's no question, Rav Chaim Volozhiner was very close to the Tzemach Tzedek. They did stuff together. There were Talmidim in the Volozhiner Yeshiva, Hasidisha Talmidim. In fact, even in Mir, let's say, I think your lesson Sfifigal used to boast, Mir is the largest Hasidic yeshiva in the world. Because Mir has, you know, whatever, 7,000 Talmidim, so Mir has like, you know, 1,200 Hasidim or whatever it is. So it's the largest Hasidic yeshiva, yeah.
My understanding is that some people wanted to draw proof or deduce conclusions, at least, from the fact that in the original Cheren that the Vilna Gaon put out in Vilna, the Chaim of Lajan did not appear on it. A lot of different events.
That is correct. The Chaim of Lajan did not sign the Cheren. Interesting question, why didn't he? To say that he disagreed would be very schwer, although it's possible. I'm not gonna deny that perhaps he was expressing a disagreement.
That was to some degree the Shita of Lashir, yeah. Rebbe Zatzana.
Okay, I mean, it makes sense to me. On the other hand, his official reason.
He was in Vilna already. Yeah, he was in Vilna.
Yes, but his official reason was it would not be kavod for the Talmud to kind of agree with the Rebbe. He says, it's not for me to say I agree with the Rebbe. But again, I wouldn't deny that Rav Chaim Volozhiner maybe saw it in a different way. And, you know, it's not unheard of. Let me give you another example from a later event, which is not connected to this at all. You know, the Chassam Sofer lived, at the beginning of the 1800s, and the Chassam Sofer's conflict was not with Hasidus, it was with Reform. The Reform movement began first in Germany, then in Hungary. And the Chassam Sofer was the great, great Kanoi who fought against the legitimation of reform. And he was a big Kanoi. He put them in Cheirim. You weren't allowed to marry into their families. You weren't allowed to, etc. Now, we saw Salanter 100 years later, maybe 60, 70 years later, said that if he would have been in the generation of the Chassam Sofer, he would have taken a different approach. Because the Chassam Sofer cut off Reformed Jews from Klal Yisrael. Mm. Right? He would not allow, for example, an Orthodox rabbi to give a shir in a Reformed synagogue, because that legitimates them. But Yisrael Salanter said, I would have paskened differently. I would have said, if you have the opportunity to teach Torah and be influence on a person, you go wherever that person is and you try to teach it. So you see, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter himself held, the Chassam Sofer held, rejectionism was necessary to preserve the purity of Am Yisrael. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, you need to connect. You need to connect them and bring them together. Now, the Machlokes of the Chassidus is not compared at all to the Machlokes of Reform, but to say that Rav Chaim made a different shita, you know, that's possible. In spite of his great admiration, his great Yiras HaKavod for the Vilna Gaon, he was also a person who thought for himself. And it's interesting, now that I'm thinking out loud, that Rav Chaim Volozhiner used to quote something that he said he heard from the Gra. He held this way. He said that you're not allowed to follow a psak that you think is wrong, no matter who said it. And he said he was makabel from the Gra. Now again, this is not for us really. We're not in that madrega. But for people like it, he says the Rav has to be machria the halacha as he sees it, and you don't simply follow something because somebody who's greater than you said it. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner said that. So it could be. This might be an example of that very nekuta. You know. So it is interesting that he had a very, very different, very, very different shita. Okay. All right. Be well. Have a good night.